My name is Dan Petrisco. I'm from the University of Washington. I'm going to talk about Blackbear. We're announcing our new agile open source RISC-V multi-core. And we're designing it as a host core for accelerator-based SoCs. This work is done between Washington and Boston University. So kind of the motivation here is that traditional hardware design methodologies usually rely on proprietary tooling and proprietary IP libraries that don't promote reuse and are not accessible to hobbyists or researchers. But at the same time, new open source CAD tools and open source libraries are providing a way for hobbyists and researchers to get involved in this ecosystem. But it's no coincidence that this is happening in an era where diverse workloads require custom silicon. Accelerators allow us to continue getting these performance gains while traditional transistor scaling is kind of petered out. But while custom accelerators are the secret sauce for these new systems, they don't stand alone. You need all sorts of components like the Uncore, I/O, chip testing capabilities in order to maintain your own infrastructure just to develop a small accelerator to do a specific function task. And getting any of these components wrong can completely destroy all of your accelerator gains. So general purpose host cores are needed to coordinate all of these accelerators, all these moving parts, all these uncore systems. But when you're adding a new host core to the system, there are several considerations. You want it to be efficient, performant, and reliable. It needs to be able to do what you want in your power and performance envelope. It needs to be able to control a diverse set of accelerators, both with standard and custom interfaces. It needs to be trustable. It needs to use standard design principles, standard design methodologies, standard design languages, so that people can just look at it, inspect it, and know that it's quality. And the IP needs to be extensively verified. If you have to do this redesign and re-verification, you've lost all your benefits of reuse. And last, it needs to be free and open source. You need to be able to play around with this and understand if it will fit into your system without purchasing a license or signing restrictive NDAs. So you end up just being able to click in an accelerator. This is the ideal case. So in order to fit this niche, we developed Blackbear. We call it a base class for accelerated SoCs because we envision people taking the code, extending it to their own circumstances, and then contributing back so that other people can reuse it. We've designed the architecture to be flexible enough to allow for this extensibility, and we've released the code under permissive BSD license. But we don't want Blackbear to be the best core on the market. That's not our goal. Our highest performance core, rather. We want Blackbear to be small, efficient, and obtrusive. We want it to be able to go in as many systems as possible without dominating the performance or area, restricting performance or dominating the area. So on our route to going global, we measure our progress around four distinct axes. We have quality. Will people trust the code? Will people be able to justify putting it into silicon? Will people be able to use it everywhere? Will it fit into all use cases and be able to use all accelerators with it? Does Blackbear have everything that you need? Can it do all the general purpose code and host all the kind of accelerators that you want? And just as importantly, does it have a minimal set of features? Unused functionality in silicon takes up power and area, and most importantly, it adds complexity, which increases verification costs. And lastly, is it efficient? Does it do what you want in the power performance envelope that you need? So this is kind of the design principles that we've come up with for Blackbear. When we try to add a new feature, we consider these three factors. We try to be tiny. We want to have a small code base and small design so that it will fit as many places as possible, and also so that people can wrap their head around the code, be able to go into the code base and be able to find issues without having this kind of overwhelming part of the this overwhelming code base. We try to reuse open source libraries like BaseJump SPL, Google RISC-V DB, Berkeley Hardflow, things that are well verified and well documented so that people can come in with their own experience and be familiar with the Blackbear code base. We also want to be modular. We want people to be able to modify only a small part of the code and be able to make their own changes without having to verify other parts of the system, have these cascading effects that are extremely difficult to debug. And last, we want to be friendly. This kind of means, as engineers, we want to reinvent the wheel all the time because it's super fun. But it makes more sense to reuse libraries that exist, reuse code, and avoid non-inventive tier syndrome as much as possible. So that's kind of setting up the stage of why we developed BlackParrot and what our design goals and methodologies are. Now we'll talk about the system architecture, kind of this uncore component that makes it really easy to integrate Accelerator into our system. And I want to note, we're not trying to develop an SoC generator. Our role here is more to provide a reference SoC methodology and a bunch of building blocks that people can use to plug in their own accelerators into BlackCard's SoC or integrate BlackCard SoC components into their own systems. So in our system, BlackCard comprises of three NACs. There's what we call the Bedrock network for managing coherence transactions, the I/O network, which manages off-chip communication, and the memory network, which manages DRAM communication. These are all connected via wormhole routers, which are small, efficient, and fairly easy to verify. And we use regularized tiles to make sure that it fits into a normal hierarchical CAD flow. So I mentioned Bedrock. This is our fully cache-coherent multi-core infrastructure, which allows traditional messy-type coherence using a novel protocol. This protocol divides the system into two components, local cache engines, or LCEs, and cache coherence engines, or CCEs. The interesting thing about this is that CCEs have all the actual protocol information. Local cache engines only respond to very simple messages and have limited shadow state knowledge of the entire system. By doing this, we can eliminate all transient states during the protocol, which makes it vastly simpler to verify. So, now we'll take a look at the sample BlackCard SoC. This is kind of the reference with all the bells and whistles that you can make with the BlackCard SoC. It turns out we can separate BlackCard tiles into four distinct categories. Core tiles are the most basic type. A single coherent core of a BlackCard multi-core, along with uncore components needed to communicate with the rest of the system. Streaming accelerator or I/O tiles do not cache coherent memory. Instead, they stream data to and from the core. Now, this could be something like a GPU or a fixed function accelerator, which has a DMA. There's also coherent accelerators, which do fine-grained communication between the core and the accelerator cache coherent memory. And this is useful for cooperative workloads. This is an interesting part of BlackParrot because you're able to have cores and accelerators very fine-grained communication. This introduces a whole class of SoCs that people can develop. And last, we can extend the memory of the tile, or of the system rather, using L2 extension tiles, extending the distributed L2 and providing more directory tags and L2 cache, which allows you to change your memory to compute ratio for a specific application. Now, we'll zoom into a BlackCard core tile and look at the uncore components that make it really easy to do. So, core tiles kind of have everything that you need, and you'll see a lot of these components repeated in all the other tile types. These tiles connect with base-jump STL wormhole routers. This is leveraging an open source library. We don't maintain the code for these routers, so we're able to keep our code base lean and narrow. There's also wormhole concentrators, which allow all the components to talk through one router. There's a CCE, which manages directory tags and the coherence information for a slice of memory in the system. So all the cores are able to request data from this one CCE, which serializes all the protocols. There's also BlackCard's deeply integrated L1 caches and distributed L2 cache, which provides fast performance on tile memory. And last is the actual BlackCard core logic. And this is the only custom logic in the tile. Everything else here is reused with other components. In fact, anyone who has their own RISC-V software, please come talk to me after this. We'd love to integrate more cores into the BlackCard family. So now that we've looked at the uncore components for a BlackCard tile, we'll look at how to compose other tile types in the taxonomy. L2 extension tiles maintain the coherence directory tags with a standard CCE, but pack it the rest of the area with L2 cache. So you basically just rip out the core, but reuse all the rest of the memory in the tile. Coherent accelerator tiles have a standard LCE, but a simpler version of the CCE, which only manages configuration data, scratch pad memory, and local on-tile memory that is not coherent with the rest of the system. Streaming accelerator tiles reuse this minimal CCE, but have no need for a coherent LCE. Instead, they communicate over the I/O network or simply stream results back and forth with the rest of the system. And even among these accelerators, BlackCard has several different levels of integration logic. that you can have. Because all of the true coherence data is managed by the CCE, as long as you have a CCE attached to the Bedrock network, you can have LCEs that have different types of components seamlessly integrated without having to write any custom coherence logic. For a stream accelerator, the system only needs to generate command and response requests, which could be used over any standard memory protocol. In order to attach a coherent accelerator, the designer can reuse Black Parrot's LCEs and data cache, and only have custom accelerator logic for the actual accelerator fixed function logic. If a designer wants more control over the specification, they're able to use completely custom cache and reuse Black Parrot's LCE. Just reusing this standard cache service interface that we've defined. And lastly, designers are free to implement full custom accelerators, which obey the simple LCE functionality required by the Bedrock protocol. This option offers the most flexibility, but it has the trade-off of longer development times. We've developed this to be so modular, however, that you can start with your custom accelerator and standard Black Parrot cores, and then one by one go down the stack and customize to get the best performance, maintain testability at each step. So now we've looked at the system architecture, we'll dive a little bit into the Black Parrot core architecture. This part of the talk is a little bit, this is the first version of the Black Parrot core microarchitecture. Because we define this as standard interfaces, you can seamlessly switch in and out these different core components without any impact on the system. So the Black Parrot core itself is a simple in-order pipeline, 8 stages with full forwarding, FPU, and non-blocking, non-stalling backend. Interestingly, the directory controller is not a standard FSM-based directory controller like you'd find in most MESI-based systems. We actually have a programmable cache coherence engine, which uses a custom RISC ISA to add functionality This gives you the flexibility to program different types of coherence traffic, such as security, functionality, and debug information, even after you've taped out into silicon. And all these building blocks, have these standard latency-insensitive interfaces. And we spent a lot of time making sure these interfaces are able to have a wide range of implementations on either side without impacting the functionality or timing information of other blocks. This is key to making sure that Black Parrot is a scalable development model, and people from all over the world are able to modify different components and able to integrate them together. So now we've talked about Black Parrot's design philosophy and system architecture, so we'll talk about how we're building a flock of users and developers around the project. First, we have our modular hardware compliance test suite, and this is driven by the insight that test benches are expensive, but tests are very invaluable. Developers are able to modify small components of the system and use these standard hardware interface compliance tests to make sure that their implementation is compliant with the standard interfaces. This testing structure allows Black Parrot to be confidently extensible with robust verification. We're trying to develop Black Parrot as an example of community-driven microarchitecture. Just as Linux has this global stewardship and distributed developer base, we want Black Parrot to be directed by the community rather than controlled by any single entity. The first method is recognizing that ideally Black Parrot's users will become its developers. We want to make it as easy as possible for someone to go from downloading Black Parrot to making their first pull request. We don't want people to have intimate architectural knowledge of the system to improve their small area of expertise. If you have a TLB expert, you don't want to have him or her to understand the branch predictor in order to modify it. Second is building a development infrastructure based on freely available CAD tools. This lowers the barrier of entry so that hobbyists and researchers are able to get started up and running the system. And last is focusing on out-of-the-box experience. Users should be able to go from GitHub to simulation or even ASIC in only a matter of a few clicks, without having to debug toolchains or install proprietary software. We've successfully run Black Parrot on Arctic 7 and Genesis 2 FPGAs. We're also diligently working to get Black Parrot into Linux, which is an FPGA open source Python-based FPGA design environment, which allows people to have their own FPGA and all the peripherals accessible by Black Parrot, well, we don't have to maintain any of the code in our central infrastructure. We're very excited for this because you know, we don't want to maintain FPGA infrastructure, but we would love to get BlackBerry into the hands of all the FPGA users in the world. BlackBerry has also been taped out in an advanced 12-nanometer process node, with many more tape outs on the web. This is a process-agnostic design, which has been validated in several different techniques. And not only is BlackBerry's RTL open source, we also open source the tape-out directories that we use for taping out our chips. This is at github.com/BlackBerry examples. You can go today and look at our synthesis scripts, timing constraints, different memory information, and all our BlackBerry tape-outs, past and future, will be hosted there. We're also hoping that anyone who tapes out BlackBerry outside of our group contributes to that repo so that we can share these insights of how to get a very performant SoC QRI, quality of results. We also participate in the Open Road CAD Flow, which is a free and open source 24-hour push-button CAD flow, brand new, being developed right now. And this allows you, using OpenRoad BSG FigRam 3PDK45, to push all the way through an open source CAD flow today. This is a picture of the BlackBerry Genesis release date. And we say Genesis release because we view our role as bootstrapping a development movement rather than becoming stewards of the code ourselves permanently. We don't want to throw BlackBerry over the fence every 6 months, have people, you know, fork it and have it to their own needs, and then never contribute back and have this kind of central, agreed-upon, standard post-core world. We want this Linux-like development model where everyone works on the same code base and people are able to parameterize it enough to fit their own specific use cases. So I presented BlackBerry, the Linux capable by multi-core. It's silicon validated and ready to be included as a host core for your next accelerator project. If you want to build up a BlackBerry user base, please use an explorer, break things, crazy issues, pull requests. We're looking for a particular help with porting benchmarks. We need a lot of help on the software side, just, you know, person power. And porting the various FPGAs. Different development environments are interesting to us. We'd love to see bugs, or I'm trying to debug us a new Ubuntu 14.n. We're also looking to integrate BlackBerry with any novel accelerator system that you have. So together, please come talk to me if you're interested in working with us. We can make BlackBerry the global default choice for RISC-V boards. So, thank you.
Yeah, you have like a minute and a half to kind of do a question if you want.
Okay.
Give the next person go.
How many contributors have you got outside of the two universities?
You have to repeat it because we don't have enough questions.
The question was how many contributors have we had outside of two universities? So BlackBerry's kind of developed collaboratively with Bishop SDL. We have many outside contributors to Bishop SDL, and we've had issues that have been raised in BlackBerry that have been fixed there. BlackBerry itself, we're trying to build up this community. Any other questions? Thank you.